Well, hello everyone. Of course, most of you will have heard by now that Justin Trudeau announced his resignation last week, which is great news because he is one of the worst of the woke and a shit-lib globalist leaders that we've had, world leaders, and I think just a relic of a bygone era at this point. But yeah, it was just great to finally see him go. And of course, on this channel, I have a Canadian correspondent, the Black Horse. He's made a number of great videos since I started the revamp. And, well, he has made a kind of mini documentary charting the rise and fall of Justin Trudeau. And I appreciated the fact that he did it using pro wrestling parlance. Just for your, as a gloss, a face is a hero. And a heel is a villain, right? You cheer the face and you boo the heel. So anyway, without further ado, Black Horse, take it away.
Over the holidays, I've also had a chance to reflect and have had long talks with my family about our future. Throughout the course of my career, any success I have personally achieved has been because of their support and with their encouragement. So last night over dinner, I told my kids about the decision that I'm sharing with you today. I intend to resign as party leader, as prime minister, after the party selects its next leader through a robust, nationwide, competitive process.
Well, the night that Patty Murphy died is a night I'll never forget. Some of the boys got loaded drunk and they ain't got sober yet. As long as the bottle was passed around, every man was feeling gay. O'Leary came with a bagpipe, some music for to play.
That's how they showed their respect for Patty Murphy. That's how they showed their honor and their pride. They said it was a sin and a shame and they winked at one another. And every drink in the place was full the night Pat Murphy died.
As Mrs. Murphy sat in the corner pouring out her grief, Kelly and his gang came tearing down the street. They went into an empty room and a bottle of whiskey stole. They put the bottle with the corpse to keep that whiskey cold.
He's gone. That's right, gentlemen. Justin Trudeau has resigned. After a long struggle inside of his party, Justin Trudeau has taken the historically unprecedented... highly unusual step of resigning, not as Prime Minister of Canada, but as leader of his own party. He has coordinated with the Governor General of Canada to suspend Parliament for a period of about 3 months, during which we will have a Liberal leadership race, and following which it is quite likely that we will have an election where a new Liberal leader will face Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. At this time, it seems reasonable to review the legacy of Justin Trudeau and to have a look at what this series of events means for the future of Canada, of Canadian politics and its people. In order to look at that future intelligently and to look at Justin Trudeau intelligently, it is necessary to ground modern Canadian politics. Canada has a long history as a British colony. It fought for the United Kingdom in the War of 1812 and the Boer War and the First and Second World War. But in the period after World War II, beginning in the late 50s, Canada went through a process which historians refer to as the invention or reinvention of Canada, where Canada was remade not as a British colony, but as a colony of the American Empire. During this process, we got a new flag. We replaced the red ensign with the modern maple leaf flag. We got a new national anthem. O Canada replaced the maple leaf forever. And it's critical to understand that these changes were a part of remaking Canada from a nation which had which represented a specific people and a specific history into something quite different. To underscore this, I'm going to read the lyrics of the first verse of A Maple Leaf Forever, the former national anthem of Canada. In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came, and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our best, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. You can see the lyrics of this anthem denoted a very particular history of Canada being the result of conquest. Wolfe was the man who won the battle of the Plains of Abraham at Fort Quebec, conquering the French colony of Quebec and delivering Canada as a colony of the British Empire. You can see the thistle representing Scotland, the shamrock representing Ireland, the rose representing England entwine the maple leaf forever. Canada, in this conception, was a union of specific peoples with a specific historical heritage. None of that exists in the modern Canadian national anthem, the modern Canadian flag, any of the symbols of the new Canada. At the same time, Canada came under intense diplomatic pressure from the United States to demilitarize. You can see this in the spending that I've charted at the bottom right, but you can also see it in the sort of emblematic programs. So I've highlighted above the program, the Avro Arrow program. The Avro Arrow was to be the modern interceptor aircraft of the Canadian Air Force. It would have been an aircraft of competitive quality to the Soviet or the U.S. Air Force at the time. Not only was the program scrapped, but the company was liquidated and the machine tools used to manufacture the parts to make the Arrow were sabotaged so that they could never be used again. At the same time, a huge number of American military installations were emplaced in Canada in various locations as part of the North American Defense Zone. So you can see this is a pretty explicit change in the military posture of the country. The last part of this to change was the cultural policy of Canada. You can see the old sort of British traditional culture of Canada was replaced by, under Trudeau Sr., a policy of, quote, multiculturalism within a bilingual framework. The idea of the cultural mosaic became the idea of Canada from that point forward that was forwarded in every public institution, in our museums, in our art galleries, in our public schools, in our universities. This was the idea of Canada that was acceptable, and other ideas about what Canada was or meant were treated as unacceptable and would get you fired. With this history in mind, Justin Trudeau becomes a much more comprehensible figure. The United States was going through the cultural movement, often referred to as the Great Awakening at the time. It wasn't long after Barack Obama lit the White House in rainbow colors in celebration of the Obergefell decision. It wasn't long after that Justin Trudeau was making his famous Sunny Ways speech, where he promised to remake Canadian politics in the image of American progressivism. And so you see Justin Trudeau, scion of a former Canadian prime minister, groomed from an early age to have a certain kind of public profile, is a natural insert to represent this coalition in Canadian politics. We're going to look at Justin Trudeau's career in terms of three eras. The first era is what I call the globalist babyface era of Justin Trudeau. This is the era where Trudeau was a kind of empty vessel for neoliberal globalist policies. You can see him as a figure strongly connected to the politics of Barack Obama during this period. The next era is what I call the Just for Men Trudeau era, where he dyed his beard gray and pretended to be a serious person because the Canadian public wanted a serious person during the pandemic. And the final era of the Trudeau career is the tyrannical heel era. That's sort of late 2023, all of 2024, where Trudeau becomes a universally hated figure, and his own coalition is fracturing underneath him, and the knives really come out, and this is the era that results in his downfall. When we think about babyface globalist Trudeau, the photo ops come to mind, but it's worth understanding the transformation that he incited in the country. The most obvious part of this legacy is the mass migration element to it. During this period, all the changes in migration policy that led to the huge number of temporary foreign workers and students here on student visas began. You saw classic neoliberal soft on crime policy result in a massive increase in crime in the country. You saw the institution of medical assistance in dying in order to both save on healthcare costs and also forward the idea of personal choice as the ultimate good in public healthcare in Canada. You also saw during this period the imposition of one of the most aggressive programs of carbon taxation in the world. You can see already in 2023, Canada collected more carbon tax than anywhere else in the world besides France. And you can see that we have layered into the already legislated future many, many more escalations to that tax in the future. So this is sort of classic neoliberal globalist stuff. What people might not know about Justin Trudeau during this period is that he was also racked by a long history of kind of petty scandals. I pulled up here the Wikipedia list of Justin Trudeau's scandals during this period, but if you were interested, you could make a much more extensive list. They all boil down to the same basic formula. They're all cash for access, gifts in kind for access scandals, either to try to harvest government contracts or try to harvest carve outs in policy as the Trudeau government went forward. But this is something that Canadians were very much aware of all through this time. Every week there was a new piece of drip, a new scandal out of the Trudeau government. Then everything changed. The COVID-19 pandemic occurred in 2020, was adopted as a sort of neoliberal political issue in March of 2020, and Justin Trudeau realized that the Canadian people wanted a serious leader. So he remade his image as a serious person and executed one of the most hardline policies of lockdown and coercive vaccination that occurred anywhere in the Western world. It's hard to express to people who didn't live through this what this was like. I've shown some of the images here, one showing Quebec's Quebec went through a period where there was a hard curfew on everyone except dog walkers for like months on end. The curfew, I think, was 9 p.m. You can see here an image of Canadian school children who were forced to be 6 feet apart at all times while in school, wear masks, use hand sanitizer constantly reminded to think of themselves and their friends as vectors for possible transmission. You can see here also Adam Skelly, who was the owner of a couple of barbecue restaurants in Toronto, who attempted to open his restaurant during COVID restrictions. 50 police officers, including a mounted division, showed up at his restaurant and made sure that he was made an example of on public television, made sure that he was arrested and had a hard time. And today, Adam Skelly, instead of owning several barbecue restaurants, owns no barbecue restaurants. In a similar vein, you can see on the bottom left-hand side, Tim Stevens, who opened his church in Calgary, Alberta, during pandemic restrictions, being arrested in front of his 8 children. Arrested, cuffed, lied to by police to get him to that he wouldn't have to be cuffed and patted down to get him to surrender. You can see on the upper right-hand side, Grace Life Church, Pastor James Coates was arrested for holding church there, and the congregation continued to hold church in his absence. So the government confiscated his building and put up big barriers around it, forcing that congregation to meet in a farm field. Both Stevens and Coates were held in remand for approximately 40 days and held in solitary confinement in remand for a large portion of that of their imprisonment, nominally because of COVID, but in order to make their time hard to cause them to give up. You can see on the top left, Jacob Riom in another region of Canada who had his building confiscated and so spent his time preaching outside in the Canadian winter for months while it was uncertain whether or not he would be arrested as well. At the same time this was going on, the clients of the Trudeau regime went absolutely wild. A story which ultimately turned out to be entirely false about buried bodies of children associated with a residential school was brought to the fore and highlighted by Justin Trudeau, which led to a campaign of vandalism and arson targeting Canadian churches. In the end, about 120 Canadian churches were either burned or vandalized as a consequence all across the country. You can see the map in the bottom left there. But not only were Canadian churches targeted, all Canadian public institutions went through a kind of classic cultural revolution during this period. Statues were toppled, public buildings were renamed, public streets were renamed, institutions were purged of individuals who attempted to defend Canada's history from the colonial period. Just classic cultural revolution stuff. And all these people were on the streets. All these people were gathered in large crowds. None of these people were subject to the same standards that regular Canadians were subject to with regard to masks, vaccines, public gatherings. None of these people were arrested. None of these people faced any legal consequences. Eventually, this level of tyranny incited a predictable populist result. The particular spark that led to it was Trudeau's policy restricting truck drivers who had not yet been vaccinated from crossing the Canadian U.S. border without a 20-day period of quarantine. If you're a trucker and you've got to be locked in a hotel for 20 days every time you cross the border, you essentially cannot make a living as a trucker that way. And so the truckers organized a convoy to express their displeasure in Ottawa. There's a much more detailed history we could provide of the convoy itself. It was part populist uprising, part Western elite decapitation effort for the Conservative Party of Canada in order to recapture their political vehicle in Ottawa. But what's most important about the truck convoy is not that it happened, it's the way the Canadian government responded to it. And here's Trudeau with the truck convoy on its way to Ottawa.
We know the way through this pandemic is by getting everyone vaccinated. And the overwhelming majority, close to 90% of Canadians, have done exactly that. The small fringe minority of people who are on their way to Ottawa or who are holding unacceptable views that they're expressing do not represent the views of Canadians.
you heard that correctly. Justin Trudeau characterized the truck convoy as a fringe minority expressing views that were unacceptable in Canadian public life. These were regular people who wanted to be able to earn a living and wanted to be able to have a normal life in Canada. This was the beginning of what was one of the least competent crackdowns against a protest movement that I've ever seen anywhere in the world. And it began with framing the issue such that none of the concerns of any of the members of the protest movement were considered legitimate. The next step was for Justin Trudeau, when the protest actually materialized, to flee Ottawa, go to his cottage, and fail to address the issue at all for several weeks. And so you had a several-week period where the protest existed outside the Canadian Parliament buildings and all through Ottawa, where Trudeau was hiding at his private residence, far away from what was going on. Finally, when it became necessary to address, when he finally summoned the courage to address the issue, rather than addressing it using existing tools of sovereignty, Trudeau invoked the War Measures Act, recently renamed the Emergencies Act, and instead of using it, and even then, instead of addressing the protest directly right away, he used the emergency powers of the War Measures Act, which are essentially unlimited, to first freeze the bank accounts of members of the protest, and second, threaten the custody arrangements between the single parents involved and their children. These were deeply, deeply delegitimizing moves for the Canadian government. And not only were they effective at delegitimizing the Canadian government, but they also failed to disperse the protest almost completely. And so in the end, Trudeau had to do what always has to be done with protests like this and send in the police to crack heads. And they didn't even do that very well. You can see on the left-hand side of the screen, the police in the process of clearing the truck protest, sending mounted police through the crowd. They trampled an old lady. You can see her on the ground there. She's on a walker. The police initially claimed that the walker was a bike that they threw at the horsemen. In point of fact, she's just an old lady on a walker trying to get out of the way, and they trampled her because walking mounted police through a crowd like that is an absolutely insane thing to do. We could go on about this forever, but it's just a nakedly tyrannical use of power by a group of people who are not very competent at using kinetic power. This was the beginning of a long series of fractures within the coalition that supported Justin Trudeau within Canada. The first of these fractures was the fracture with corporate Canada over the use of the Emergencies Act to freeze bank accounts. So Canada has a very important set of banking interests that are domestic to Canada that have an international reputation that's quite valuable to them. Freezing the bank accounts of political dissidents was very bad for business for these institutions in some of their Latin American operations. This really damaged Justin Trudeau's relationship with that part of the Canadian the Laurentian elite that typically support him. This fracture between Canada, between Trudeau and corporate Canada would continue to escalate as Trudeau tried to grab onto popularity through sort of left-wing populist rhetoric. He went and blamed Loblaws, which is one of the largest grocery chains in Canada, for the inflation which occurred as a result of the money printing that occurred during the pandemic. Galen Weston, the Weston family, the owners of Loblaws, are one of the most powerful corporate interests in Canadian politics, one of the most powerful members of his coalition. So attacking them publicly fundamentally fractured his support. Then October 7th happened, and Justin Trudeau was caught between part of his coalition, which went with, quote, bring them home, and part of his coalition that went with save the children of Gaza. Justin Trudeau went with bring them home, but he permanently damaged the relationship between himself and a large fragment of his coalition, especially his kind of street radical element, to the extent that later that year, when Justin Trudeau attempted to visit a mosque as part of his sort of campaigning, he was actually booed in public on live TV visiting a mosque. In the same way, he went on vacation that winter to a part of BC where you get sort of typical wealthy libs, and he was harassed and booed by the crowd of wealthy libs while trying to go snowboarding. He didn't just fracture his coalition, he fractured off elements of his coalition into a position where they personally hated him. Justin Trudeau kind of tried to recapture the sort of magic of his 2015, 2016, 2017 self. Listen to this attempt, and you can kind of see the competence with which this was executed.
Maximal level with quality early learning and childcare. It is exactly the example of the kinds of things you need to do to counter the she session and turn it into a she-covery.
Believe it or not, she session to she-covery didn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. The Justin Trudeau coalition was permanently damaged, and at the same time, every effort that he made to try to put it together again was either hampered by his low competence or hampered by the fact that during the pandemic, with his use of power, he created a well-organized and highly motivated minority of Canadians who hold a deep personal hatred of him. So anywhere that it was announced that Trudeau would be, you would see crowds with fuck Trudeau flags, fuck Trudeau bumper stickers, all sorts of paraphernalia, protest signs. He couldn't go anywhere, have any kind of photo op, have any kind of public appearance, and not have these people heckling him, shouting at him, making it impossible for him to project himself as the positive figure that he projected himself as in the period between 2014 and 2020. Eventually, his outward unpopularity and the fractures within his own coalition led to him being in the position where he was forced to resign. He was able to hold it together by leveraging the kind of his knowledge of the corruption of the Liberal Party over his MPs for a while. So he managed to hold on for almost a year in this position where he was just hated by everyone in the country from the least to the greatest. But eventually, the realities of politics caught up to him. So where does that leave us? Canadian politics is going back now into the classic dialectic that has represented the post-war consensus in Canada, but also in the entirety of the American Empire in the post-war era. The new Liberal leader, whether it's Mark Carney, as I've pictured here, or whether it's one of the other candidates, will be a representative of neoliberal globalism. And the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, Pierre Poilievre, well, I'll let Mr. Poilievre speak for himself and you can decide where he stands.
So as you can imagine, it's a pretty big honor for a simple goy from the prairies to stand before you today.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Canadian politics going forward. Welcome back to the reservation, where your choices are Mitt Romney or Barack Obama. Thank you so much for your time and interest. I hope you enjoyed the video.
Canada originally was put together by two groups of people who didn't have much in common but didn't want to be American.
The line just popped into my head. a bunch of the boys was a whooping it up. And there I got my start.
We have had a flag. Flags can be changed. But flags cannot be imposed, the sacred symbols of a people's hopes and aspirations, by the simple, capricious, personal choice of a Prime Minister of Canada.
I have watched this country for half of my life from abroad, and we have turned complacency into just that, a national sport.
I am resolutely opposed to all innovation, all change, but I am determined to understand what's happening. I don't choose just to sit and let the juggernaut roll over me.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.